You've tuned in to Tabletop Meta, a podcast where we talk about the meta of tabletop gaming.
Why we game, how we game, what games we play, and what all that says about us as gamers and people.
I'm glad you could join us here today. I'm Will.
And I'm Becky. Welcome to Tabletop Meta.
And today is episode number 8. We're going to talk about the dreaded fear of missing out. We're going to do a review of import, export, and we'll talk a little bit about ourselves in a little newer segment we have coming up. But right now, it's definitely the weather has shifted. We actually had the warm spell because of the hurricane, and now we have cold.
Well,
or cool.
I have to point out that where we live in the middle of northern Wisconsin is that usually we get a solid freeze at the beginning of September, and now we are moving into almost the middle of October when we're recording this, and we've only had a couple light frosts, so it's really crazy for us right now. I mean, I'm used to having it. It's good for me. I have a lot of things to do, but...
Well, I mean, there was a little bit of a frost on my car this week.
Yeah, that would have been the closest. That was the only time we had a frost.
Yeah, that was, yeah. So today what we wanted to talk about was... I think this comes in a lot of different things, but also with, especially with board gaming, and both Becky and I have seen articles, is the fear of missing out from, you know, or as I think it, you know, maybe is not as commonly as keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that everybody talks about the fear of missing out, and that is seen as, you know, a thing that's natural to do, to fear, and it is. But when you talk about keeping up with the Joneses, that's seen as a terrible thing to do, and I see them basically as the same thing.
Well, I think especially when you're on Facebook, you're on Twitter, or Instagram even a little bit, that you're seeing people promote those new games, which they have, you know, that's part of life today. You know, you have someone either in a bigger company or a smaller company, and they're doing all they can to maximize their interest in a game that is part of hundreds of games coming out every year. You have to do that. But we're also, I think all of us are affected by that saturation.
Right. And people are very good at their jobs, and it's natural as people to fall for the hype. I mean, we like the nice and the new and the shiny, and we like to be all part of that. And it's just a natural thing. And there's nothing wrong with people selling their products and hyping. I mean, as a podcaster, we're out there, we're trying to make us. We would love you to fear missing out on every single one of our episodes.
Yes, and talk about what we do.
We would like to be the thing that people are out there talking about, but it's a tendency that we all have, and it's not the marketer's fault, and it's not the people producing the games, and it's not really a fault at all. It's a tendency we have that we have to watch out for ourselves, that we don't actually fall for it and think that this is the one thing that we need or we will die if we don't have it.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think the biggest Kickstarter that we just backed was kind of interesting, was Rising Sun. And that was interesting because I didn't get the Blood Rage Kickstarter,
right,
which was the one before it. And I was excited to see it, but I kind of missed a little bit of maybe the hype.
Well, you know, for me, Blood Rage had several things that do not excite me at all. First of all, the name Blood Rage, that's not going to draw me in ever as a game. And I've heard lots of people talk about how that was the thing that drew them in. It's like,
well, then also example the miniatures too.
Right. And that was the other thing. I'm not a huge fan of miniatures because for a variety of reasons, but one, I don't have the time to paint miniatures. And two, when you have all these beautiful miniatures, you should have a place to display them instead of locking them in a box after you've put all that work into them. It's a me thing, and I understand that. Not everybody looks at it that way. So most of our miniatures are not painted.
No, I've done a little bit.
Well, you're more the artist anyhow.
Yeah, but it was interesting because a friend who had gotten the Blood Rage game, and he even mentioned that he had sold some of the exclusive figures and got a lot of his money back in a way, which was kind of interesting. And so I actually got to play the game and I was quite impressed with it. I think the miniatures are nice. It wasn't essential to the gameplay.
Okay, I have to say I was impressed with the miniatures. We looked at them. I think we were at Nexus, and I was very impressed with the detail in the miniatures and how they looked. You know, monster miniatures are not my thing to begin with, but I thought that they were very well done, and that made me inclined to be willing to support Rising Sun.
Yeah, and then it was also that I actually got to play, and I found the gameplay quite engaging.
Yeah, now who does Rising Sun?
Come On.
Okay, and I like Come On games. I mean, we've played a couple of them outside of the little robot battle one, that cat one.
Geekado or whatever, which is the Yahtzee.
That one was good. My problem is the manipulation of the dice is not really my thing.
The Yahtzee type mechanic.
Right, but that was a fun game. They had great miniatures in that one too, and it wasn't a horrible game. It was a quick little fun game that you could play in a short period of time. So I really... And then Come On also did Elysium?
No.
That's
Elysium was
Cowboys.
Space Cowboys.
Space Cowboys, right.
Which I enjoy their stuff.
I love their stuff. I was trying to think what else Come On did that we've played, that I've played.
Well, the interesting thing was then after we had gone, when they came out with the Rising Sun Kickstarter, we definitely sat down and said, you know, do we want to jump in on this? And when we heard about some of the gameplay, where it's much more of a diplomacy, we were definitely kind of hooked on it. So, but it was interesting because we didn't jump right on. We went and thought about it and discussed it before we jumped in.
I tend to be a terrible impulse buyer when I let myself be. So therefore, my main thing is I will not do things upon... I need to have reflection and really think and list, because otherwise I'd buy everything and we'd be in debt forever.
Well, I think that also comes in down to the personality of fighting the urge, or how well you fight that urge.
Yeah, there's different ways to fight fear of missing out.
Yes.
One of them is I think not having to own the game.
Yeah, it depends also if you've got a game group around that. You know, the surprising thing is when we found out we backed it, there was at least four other people in our game group that also backed it. So we're going to have a bunch of copies around. We have a friend that bought it because the Japanese theme, and then another one that bought it, you know, I don't know exactly the reason, but he went a little bit bigger than us. He got like the playmat and everything.
Right. Yeah. Completionism is always a trick for fear of missing out.
Yes, that's true. And I think you have to be careful. You have to be observant of what you're doing. I know for myself, I would love to go and spend, you know, hundreds of dollars in games, but I do have a few rules for my Kickstarter obsession.
Right.
It's something I always like looking, but I definitely, there's the money wise.
Yeah.
If it hits that 75 to 100, then I kind of pull back. I also will look at the game and look at what kind of a game it is. Now that comes from experience. You get some people who are not as experienced in looking at a game and seeing what it is. I look at it and see, how is it going to fit my collection?
Right.
Am I going to be using, this is a game that I don't have. There are a few games that I definitely will jump in just because it's the name. Like the Networks expansion. I love Networks. Anything the Tiny Epic guys do, I love. Those are things I will jump in right away, but without even thinking.
Yeah. Okay. One of the things I was thinking about is completionism tends to feed into the fear of missing out, especially on Kickstarter. Because if you like to have all the bits and pieces, and all of that. Then you join in Kickstarter, and then Kickstarter adds, and it feeds on that, because then it says, oh, you can buy this bonus thing and that bonus thing and this bonus thing, and you can add into it, which is a great marketing technique. And I'm not saying that, but what it does is people who have to have it all, then they suddenly get really anxious when they can't get into all of it. You know, oh, we have to reach this Kickstarter level to get this, and then I have to buy the particular box that'll hold it that they're selling and all of that.
Yeah, it's definitely something run into. And one of them that I was I think I had to be really careful on was the Dreadball Kickstarter.
There was a Dreadball Kickstarter?
Yeah, there's been a couple on that. And
obviously I don't play Dreadball with you.
We played it once. I'd like to play it. I'm working on some teams, but the thing is, that's a game that I don't really have players around, so it's kind of something I enjoy for myself. But it's interesting because in Dreadball, it's a kind of a sports-themed, futuristic game.
Okay, I remember. Is this with the orcs and the...
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they have, of course, then they have teams, and you can get all the teams, and I'm like, I don't need all the teams. I get the teams I like. But definitely, I could see, if I wasn't careful, I could go, well, geez, I could pick up that team and that team, and then all of a sudden I've got 20 of them, and I got no one to play with.
Right. And the other thing you had said earlier was that they bought Blood Rage, and they sold some of the extra figures. Mm-hmm. I think collecting, which is a type of completionism in a way, I suppose, and collectibleness of things also leads towards this huge fear of missing out, that you have this. So you can buy this, and then, oh, look, you can sell them. And, you know, that's a totally different market and a different mindset.
Well, that also just doesn't apply to gaming. I mean, you look at sports cards.
Yes. No, absolutely.
There's a lot of things. I think you could almost do any interest, and there could be that.
Comic books is a good thing of how collecting kind of really made comic books harder to collect rather than easier to do.
Yes.
So,
I mean, actually, you know. I mean, this is completely off the gaming. Is in my job, I do framing, and there's a gentleman that he's a big music guy. He loves going to concerts. He buys limited edition prints that are sold at concerts and gets them framed up. And I think he has something like 30, 40 different prints and posters that he's working on. And they're gorgeous. But it's definitely, you know, it's for him. I can definitely tell it's a memory, which is interesting. I know that's completely off topic, but it definitely is.
This is tabletop meta. We talk meta on tabletop.
That's true. But I have to say, it's definitely interesting, because to seeing that in other venues, I mean, I think both of us have enjoyed going to other events, and you'll definitely find that, I think, almost in kind of anything, there's people who are completionists in their chosen field or of what they enjoy. They want to enjoy and complete and compete. I don't say compete is the right word, but, you know, complete.
Yeah, that's true. And I know several people who don't like, for example, that The Simpsons aren't going to be released on DVD anymore.
Really?
Because they have all of the Simpsons on, you know, seasons on DVD. But that's not going to be, so they're not going to have their complete collection of Simpsons.
I think we stopped about season 10.
Yeah, but I'm not even close to a completist.
No.
In fact, I will skip middle sections of shows that I don't like and pick up where I like them again, because I can do that.
I tend to be, I think, a little bit of a completist, but I think sometimes, I think also it depends on the length of your time in the fandom. Like, I was actually really surprised. I enjoy Star Trek, and they re-released some of the sets, the DVD sets, in full completion, and now I have them at a much lower price.
Yes.
And I enjoy that. I mean, that was kind of, I think, though, a little bit of benefit of just age. And that's something I think some people might want to look at, is you don't have to have it now.
Well, that goes back to, I forgot what episodes. Yeah, I should keep a list of episodes where we talked about, can an old game be interesting?
I don't know if we did that.
We didn't do that? I thought we talked about that.
No, we have to add that on.
Oh, well, okay. No, no. If we don't have an episode about that, we will soon enough.
Yeah, you can I'll say, I'd love to hear.
Episode 5 is old versus new. At least that's what I have on my notes.
I have treating games, but maybe we'll have to double check on it.
Yeah, well, whatever. We but, can go back.
But, you know, you'll have to tell us if there's a game that you found later in life that you've enjoyed or something you completed that would be interesting.
Well, see, and now this is the fear of missing out. I suppose this is a type of fear of missing out. I am more than willing to look at a game. And then Time Stories, for example.
Yes.
Time Stories is a game that I'm really interested in playing, but I don't know if I like it enough to pay full price for what they have right now. And I'm all for people charging the money that they're charging because you have a choice to buy it or not.
That's the free market, though.
Right. And I'm all for that. But I can wait until Time Stories pops up someplace where it's cheaper. For example, Agents of Smersh. I was interested in it. It had gameplays we liked. It was out. Was that a Kickstarter?
Yes.
And it was
about 3 years ago, I think.
Right. And it was beyond my what I wanted to pay, because that's just how I look at things. And I'm not saying it wasn't worth it, but it wasn't worth it to me. So I waited. And just recently, a friend was selling their copy, and we got it for a price that I felt was very reasonable, and I was more than happy to pay. He was happy. He bought it. He used it. He sold it, and I got it. And now I have a game I like.
Now, that's kind of gets into an interesting point. I'm thinking two different things. One is, if you have someone that you game with or a significant other, how do you relate with them when you're dealing with your obsession about games? Also, that's interesting, gets into the games when after the hype has died down and people have played it, they can pass it on to another person.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
We're fortunate to know somebody who tends to cull his game collection quite often.
Yes.
And will have games that I find interesting. And he's had his enjoyment of them. He's more than willing to sell them to somebody else again. And then we'll have it. Our game collection is more of a standing game collection, I suppose I should say. That yes. We keep them all so that we can, in our community where we do that, we can play these games and have them brought out. It's more of a kind of a, it's our private collection, but it's more of a club idea that we have a wide variety of games that people can play.
I don't think it helps that we have space.
It definitely does.
I mean, if we were living in an apartment with just the two of us, we would probably, I think, do a little bit more of cutting out games or store them differently.
Yeah.
Because we would go, we don't have the space for this.
Well, I have to admit that I could never live in a tiny house.
Right.
Because I have things and things I like. And things I do stuff with, not just collections that, mm-hmm. you know, and I understand people have collections. We have enough collectible stuff as it is. But, you know.
I also think that's interesting is in age, too. Because if you're 20 years old, you're 15 years old, you're going to look at collecting more different than you are if you're maybe 30, 40, 50, 60.
Right. Well, and especially when you start later life, scary. As you get older, you have to look at things, what is going to happen in the future more. You know, at 20, True. You're going to be around forever. At 50, it's not so much. So fear of missing out takes on, I think, a different tenor when you're older, simply because you've survived so many fears of missing out already. You know, oh my God, this concert is coming through and I didn't get to it. And then, you know, 10 years later, it's like, oh, well, it was just a concert. And then if you went to it and you thought you were going to miss out, and you look back on it and you'll, well, that memory actually wasn't as you know, it's age always gives you a perspective that
it is fascinating. Yes.
That you don't get otherwise.
Yeah,
you know, I can't think of too many things in my life that I've had disappointments being unable to do things that I thought would have been massively cool. But looking back on it, it's not a gaping hole in my life, not having that one thing. And all that fear of missing out, I replaced with other things that I thought.
And
I think it's a perspective of time that you only get, you know, through. That is why the cliches of age are often very true.
Yes, I'd have to agree with that. And so, I mean, I think that's a great perspective. But I also would love to hear what everyone else has on the subject.
How do you survive the fear of missing out?
You know, do you cut out social media? Do you talk with friends? Do you group together and say, well, we'll all chip in? Do you
just buy it all and thrive on the fact that you can not miss out on anything?
We'll just have to see.
Yes.
And now it's time for the game review.
It's where we talk about a game we really like or have recently played.
The tabletop meta rating system has 4 levels. At the top of the list is...
Buy it! I have to have this in my game library.
One step down is...
I really like this game. I will play it anytime.
Just below that...
I'll play it if somebody else wants to, or if I really want to be at the table.
And the bottom rating is?
It's not my kind of game. I think I'll pass.
Today's game is Import Export by Dark Flight Games. The designer is Jordan Dapier, and he also did the artwork and graphics. This is a mix of 2 high-rated games, which I have not played, Container and Glory to Rome. It uses a deck of 100 unique cards to simulate the shipping of materials, importing them, gaining powers, and scoring points. I picked this one off Kickstarter just recently, and it is phenomenal. I absolutely adore this game. The gameplay is fascinating because each card can represent 3 to 4 different things, where it can represent the shipment, it can represent the container to ship other things, it can represent the powers to get more turns, it can also represent the goods at the end.
Right, and then using the card for one of those options means it's unavailable at that moment to be used for any other options that you have. And in fact, sometimes you put the cards in your hand, on your ship, in your shipyard. I'm not sure which one it is, just down in your collection that you have. And that is, as it's removed from the game, as it's part of your hand for permanently, then it will never be available to be used for any of the other options.
For certain things. It's very fascinating. Everyone, when you play an action, everyone gets to react. So the player in action is quite high.
Right. If you've ever played Eminent Domain, that's where you take an action and you have a choice to follow. I found it interesting. One of the players that we played with didn't like the fact that being the lead person who takes the action doesn't get you really any benefits that you have.
Some benefits, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like an Eminent Domain. You get an extra thing. It gives you a real bonus for being the leader. In this one, it doesn't. What you just have to do is really kind of follow along.
Yes.
I think Roll for the Galaxy had something. Am I recalling
No.
that? I've only played Roll for the Galaxy once, so if I'm wrong, please let me know.
Yes. It is. It's a great player interaction game. I think the gameplay is quite dynamic. I was actually quite surprised on how fast the game is, because it's usually about 15 to 20 minutes a person.
It does have a fairly steep learning curve and the complexity of it and how everything works. But once you've got that down pat, I mean, it's not impossible to learn once, you know, I think for teaching this game, you got to lay it out a couple different times and really get the steps down so that
it was definitely a couple times. First time we were kind of like about three quarters of the way through the game, and we were going, all of a sudden it just then clicked where you go, oh, because I do this, this happens, or because I've done right. that, something else happens, which I was very surprised. But once you got that down, for me, this game really hits a nice spot
and,
for me.
And I suppose if you've played the other games, what, Glory to Rome?
Yes.
And Container, then you would have a step up in knowing.
I think at least the idea, yes.
The ideas for this. I found this game to be, and this says a lot about me, okay, and I'm not sure if anybody else, I found it to be extraordinarily frustrating the first couple of times I've played it because I couldn't get it to work the way I thought it should. I mean, I kept trying things, and I really needed, we were playing with four people, I needed one other person to do, I think it was the load action, mm-hmm. and they were all primed and ready. They should have done the load action, but instead they did something else. So when it came around to me, I had to play a card as a load action that I really should have been able to load before, and it ate it up. And then as soon as I played it, everybody went, oh, yay, you're loading, I'll follow. And then I knew that I would be stuck for another round, and I would have to play the load action as my action again, because that's the only thing I could do. And everybody else would be off and doing nifty little things, and it was kind of frustrating because they were waiting for me to come around when they really needed to do it too. Now, whether or not they were waiting is probably not true. They probably didn't have the cards to do it.
Right.
But it tended to frustrate me on that level that I don't always like the, it was the thing that they should be doing in to help me, of course. So that's a very selfish point of view.
Well, I think definitely it was only until about the third game that you really started to click on it.
Right. I finally, whatever was working, and the games that frustrate that for me are really kind of, okay, I'm frustrated easily when I'm learning a new game. So that's, I got to play it at least two or three times for me to say once how that goes. But I think I've got it now. And I like being able to know what I'm doing is working. And I think I've figured that out. I don't like, even if I win games, I don't like winning them if I don't know what made me win.
That's true. There's been a few games that we've played that way that are in that. But this one I have thoroughly enjoyed. This is one that if I can get to the table with people, I will. I find it engaging.
How did it play, do you think, four-player versus two-player?
I think with four, you definitely notice the interaction a lot more.
Yes.
But I have enjoyed two-player games very well.
Yep. They played, I think, differently.
Slightly differently.
But I think this is a game, too, that reacts very, that tailors to the strategy of the people playing it. Because we have one player in our group who is extremely aggressive in all of his playing. And that was different playing with him in there. It changed the tenor of the game.
Definitely.
Than when playing with people who aren't. And I find games that can really feed off of who's playing and kind of change their feel, I find them interesting games because then you end up really playing the players rather than playing the game. Does that make
yes.
sense? Yeah.
Yeah, you're definitely, okay. with certain players, you can be reacting and affecting how they're going to play, because if they've set up their field in a certain way, you know they're looking to play a certain style of play.
Right, and that affects what cards you play, yes. and what cards actually you even get to see.
Oh yeah, so definitely it'll affect your actions, I would right. think also.
I like the game a great deal.
So what would you give it for a rating and using our rating system?
I like the game. I'll play it anytime.
For me, this was such a must buy. It's so wonderful. I've enjoyed it immensely. And that is Import Export.
Let us know what you think about it. This is a new segment we're starting. Something unique about our week. And we're doing it because it's a universal trait of people that we tend to view those who like what we like as being just like us. And those who don't like what we like don't like what we like as being different. While that's not exactly untrue, it's not a completely accurate viewpoint either. So we've decided to add a little bit at the end of the podcast where you can get to know us as people outside of gaming. So that's what our Something Unique About Our Week segment is. It's something fun and interesting, to us at least, that we did this week, so you can see what we're like.
Wonderful. That's a nice idea. For me, it's definitely, this was a F1 race weekend, so I was watching the F1 race. I'm a huge F1 fan. Love Haas racing, Ferrari, and go Kimi, definitely.
Yes. I am not a huge race fan. However, I am interested in a ton of things. So therefore, when he watches the race, I now know racers and race cars and what they are. And they're actually very fun to watch. However, not being a race fanatic or even massive fan, I do not get up extra early in the morning to watch practice and qualifying.
That is definitely one thing you learn as an F1 fan in the U.S. You have to give up at weird times to watch the race live. I didn't do it this today because it was the Singapore race, no, the Malaysian race, and they were racing at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah. Now, what's the nighttime race that they have?
Singapore.
That's the Singapore race. And that's at night, so it's actually at a decent time here in the U.S., but that's interesting to watch. Something unique about my week is so many things to choose from. I have been canning fruit juice, cleaned out berries in our freezer that have been there substantially longer than the recommended 1 year that you keep berries in your freezer. And they were no longer presentable, as in when you freeze things for a long time, they begin to look poorly. They did not smell freezer burnt. They were stored well. But we juiced them all, and now I'm canning the juice so that when I am much less busy, I will be able to make either fruit juice or infused liquors, or I'll make jam, or maybe just syrup to eat on top of ice cream. I don't know. We have got several quarts of juice that I'll have to do something with, and I've had my eye on making wine, so maybe I'll try that.
That'd be fun. So that's a little something about us. We'd love to hear your response from today's podcast about fear of missing out. What do you do? What experiences you have? We love you for listening, so please give us a contact, give us a review, and let us know what you think.
Hit the like button if you like us. We'll come up with something massive that'll make you afraid not to like us, and then you'll have to do it because otherwise you'll miss out massively. However, I'm not really sure I can do that. There's a reason I'm not in advertising. So, well, have a good week and have fun gaming.
You've been listening to Tabletop Meta.
Because there's more to gaming than playing the game.
See you next time.
Tabletop Meta is produced and edited by Will and Becky Clouty as a part of Burlap and Daisies. For more information on Tabletop Meta, visit our website at tabletopmeta.com. There you can find show notes for each of our episodes, as well as blog posts and more. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter as Tabletop Meta, and on Instagram as tabletop_meta. Finally, check out our guild on BoardGameGeek. Thanks for being a part of Tabletop Meta, because there's always more to gaming than playing the game.